So hi, everybody. I've really been enjoying the conference so far and getting to know you. You're really interesting and lovely, lovely people. I was so moved last night listening to your stories, truly. I've been working in this field of religious recovery for 20 years now. My book is really old. I mean, I'm way overdue to write a new edition or a couple more. I've got, you know, more books in my head. I just haven't had time, and I'm very disorganized. I have a terrible case of ADD, and hopefully I have other talents, because I just don't produce literature the way that some writers do. But I think I'm pretty good when I'm in person and when I'm with a client or when I'm with a group. So I do recovery groups, and I have had ex-Mormon clients, and I do recovery retreats, and which are pretty intense. And I have a lot of video of these experiences. And I do have some skill in editing, but again, my time management sucks, so I haven't really put them all together. If any of you have any video skills, let me know. Anyway, I worked very hard on this. I mean, this is like left-handed. Left-handed is code for doing something that you're not really, is not your strength, but you could do it anyway. Right, so I did a PowerPoint presentation, except I did it in Keynote, and so here it is. Anyway, excited to be here, and like I said, last night was very, very moving, and I am mostly extremely impressed, because I think that Mormonism, among all of the controlling religions, does a bang-up job of indoctrination from infancy. So those of you that have gotten yourselves out, who have escaped, it's like Alcatraz, right? Or I had, and I think visually, I use a lot of guided imagery. When I work with people, it's like a form of hypnosis, because we have to work at very deep levels sometimes to move the mental furniture around, because sometimes just language and cognitive stuff isn't enough. So I use a lot of imagery, and I had this image of you guys climbing out of the muck, the sticky swamp, you know, just grasping and climbing your way out, because it sounds so sticky. And even one of you that was talking to me afterwards was using this imagery of the claws of Mormonism that get into you and keep you there. So, congratulations. Actually, that's the first thing I say to anybody who has come out of a controlling kind of religion. The first thing I say is congratulations. Sometimes they're surprised. But I have a lot of respect for you. I have a lot of respect for you. I am honored, because I know that it took courage. I know that it took strength, because these religions don't teach you self-reliance. They don't teach you to look to yourself, to have some intelligence, to respect your own feelings, your own intuition, and do what seems right to you. No, these religions teach you to hand over all of that inner wisdom and all of that strength and all of your own thinking ability to outside authority, right? Over and over and over again. So learning to think for yourself and reclaim that is a major, major accomplishment. And then it has to go on developing, and it has to grow and deepen and widen as you learn more and more. And appreciate yourself and find out that no, you're not stupid or empty or crazy or without resources. You're amazing. So anyway, give yourselves a big round of applause. And welcome to the world. Welcome to the world. This is your home. We all live here. And actually, a lot of us are having a good time. Here and now, we're not waiting until the afterlife. I went hiking one time with my sister. My husband and I went hiking with my sister and brother-in-law, and they're like deeply entrenched in fundamentalist Christianity. And it started to storm and rain, and we were kind of getting lost. And husband, we were a little crazy and being silly, and they were being much more conscientious. And I asked them, I said, you know, it's so good that you're with us, and I hope you can take care of us and lead the way, because we're just having too much fun, and it's because we're always trying to have a lot of fun, because, you know, we have to have our fun now. And I said, you're gonna have bliss for all eternity in heaven, and we're not gonna make it there. We have to do it now. So I appreciate you, you know, taking care of us a little, because we're a little out of control. She didn't think it was funny. Although when she wants to have fun, she looks to me. Okay. All right, now I'm going to have to be serious, too. Okay. Oh, all right. Well, I just thought I'd introduce myself a little bit. This is before I was a Christian. I was okay. I was born fine the first time. This business of born again, you know. Oh, and then I inherited my religion. My parents were missionaries. That's me in the middle holding my little sister. Oops. That's me getting baptized. You can see how I'm pretty serious now. I'm about 11 or 12, and now I get it. I get it. I gotta go with the program. That's my dad. I went here. I'm a high school senior. I'm salutatorian, and I'm talking all about Jesus at my high school graduation. And that's Jesus and me. We were pretty close. He was the best imaginary friend. He was my first lover. And that's my husband. Now Jesus has competition. And that was like the beginning of the end, right? Because I got some real hugs, some real contact. I'm gonna say things today that are kind of fast and blunt, because I've been doing this work for a long time now, and over time, I found that this is really serious stuff, and the mental health field, I was going to say the mental health industry, hasn't caught on.
Really serious stuff.
And I've coined the term religious trauma syndrome, because people are really damaged sometimes, and they have real, you know, panic attacks.
Hasn't caught on. And I've coined the term religious trauma syndrome, because people are really damaged sometimes, and they have
real... Is that Homeland Security? They caught on. They're on to me. But seriously, as I've worked in this area, what I find out doesn't get better. It gets worse. I find out more and more, because there's a lot of secret suffering, really. And it's deep, and there's a lot, and it hasn't been named. And it's kind of like 50 years ago with eating disorders. Nobody had named anorexia, bulimia, and yet there were millions suffering, right? Seriously. And so it's the same with religious trauma. There's no name for it. It's not in the diagnostic manual. And everybody in this country thinks that religion is either benign or good for you, right? So I disagree with that strongly. And so I'm speaking out about it. I'm not worried about losing my practice, which is what people say. I'm not worried about offending God. And I'm not worried about anything. So I'm just going to say things bluntly. And so I'm saying this on the front end here because I know that some of you here today might be taking baby steps out of Mormonism, out of your religion, out of your safety zone. And I don't want to offend you. But I also don't have a lot of time and I sort of like to cut to the chase. So forgive me. I don't mean to be mocking or harsh. All right. I'm talking from a clinical point of view and I'm talking from a lot of experience. And so I also want to distinguish between authoritarian, which is what you're quite used to, and authoritative. Do you know the difference? Okay. And so I hope that what I say is authoritative because I've done a lot of research on this. It's not just all the people that I've talked to in my office, but it's my own experience. And it's also a huge amount of research that I've done. And so, you can go to my website and see a lot of references and so forth, but I'm not going to have time to give you all the research to back up everything I say. But, if you can trust me a little bit, I'd like you to kind of benefit from my years of experience and hear some of my conclusions. Do you understand what I mean? Okay. As an agent of Satan. No. This is the part where I don't want to scare you. I mean, this is what people do worry about, but I don't think this slide should be on here.
I want you to read this disturbing post. It's from a website from this Colorado killer that we've been telling you about. You're going to be startled by this. We were either at church, he writes, or being brainwashed in Christian homeschool. When we did have free time, we were either forced to pray, read the Bible, do chores, or, well, nothing, since we were not allowed to do anything. Well, I got all fed up with the insanity, hypocrisy, conflicting doctrines, the child abuse, brainwashing, the lies, the gossip, the scandals, the threats, and the fear-mongering. Me and many others are waking up. We will rise up above the and against these abuses against humanity. Now, this is a kid who's nuts. He's a crazed killer. His name is Matthew Murray. He wrote that. His resentment toward Christianity boiled over last Sunday when he went on a shooting rampage and killed four innocent people at a youth mission and a church before finally turning the gun on himself, with a little help from a security guard, I should add. Now, as I talked to different people about this amazing story earlier this week, I was personally stunned by the comments of one particular psychologist. Had never heard anybody say what she said. She'd reached out to Murray, interestingly enough, and she'd sympathized with his anger toward religion. Marlene Winnell is joining us again. By the way, she's written a book on this. It's called Leaving the Fold, A Guide for Former Fundamentalists and Others Leaving Their Religion. And then there's Leonard Lovett. He is here. He's going to disagree with her. He's a former pastor who now works with Pentecostal and Charismatic Churches of North America. So get ready for an interesting and, possibly disagreeable but very respectful discussion. Doctor, I'm going to begin with you. Your assertion seems to be that part of this fundamentalist movement is hurting the people who go to these churches, and in particular, children. Take the next 40, 45 seconds to make your case.
45 seconds.
Well, I think that there are some teachings in certain kinds of Christianity that are extremely toxic, and they do cause mental health problems, and they cause...
Like what?
Well, they cause people to have a real difficulty in thinking for themselves because you're really taught not to think. You're not allowed to think. You're not allowed to doubt. You're not allowed to ask questions. People that go to their pastors with just some simple questions get told that this is sinful. So they basically have to shut down. Some people even call it intellectual suicide in order to conform and be a part of this church.
These churches are all about fear and conformity. These churches are about fear and conformity. We get that.
Right.
Would you please tell us exactly which churches you're talking about? You're not talking about all Christianity, right?
No, I'm talking about the literal Bible-believing fundamentalist-type churches and other authoritarian groups. And
so the charismatics, the Pentecostals, those?
Yes, and it can also be types of Mormonism or Jehovah Witness and other kinds of groups. It can be other religions, but any religion that really basically dictates what you have to think and you have to conform to the group or else you can't belong.
All right, let's do this.
About what's going to happen to you.
We got that, but let's give Leonard Lovett a chance to respond to what he just heard you say. Have at it, Pastor.
Well, my prayers go out to the victims and persons who have suffered this particular tragedy. My concern is when the author makes the generalization about fundamentalist churches, and then she classifies Pentecostals with those groups. I think it's a giant leap from the act of a person to...
Hey, Pastor, let's do this. I don't want to talk about this person, okay? This is not about this kid. This kid was a nutcase, all right? He had completely gone bonkers, and I think we all understand that. The point she's making is that it's not him, that the church is doing that to many others who maybe don't act out this way, but nonetheless they're being hurt. That's her point, and how do you respond?
Well, I have a problem because in listening to this particular situation, it seemed as though the young man was put out of the church and apparently came back.
Pastor, we're not talking about this young man. We're talking about, she's saying many people who go to these churches have this happen to them, that your particular brand of Christianity is hurting people rather than helping them. That's what she's saying. How do you respond?
Well, that's a generalization. It's biased to say that a particular brand of religion. I must agree that there are some groups that are toxic. What they teach is very toxic.
Like who?
I won't specify specific names for reasons. But there are brands of religion that are toxic and authoritarian. But if you generalize and say Pentecostals across the board. Are authoritarian. I have a problem with that because you're generalizing.
All right, let me give the doctor a chance to respond to you then. He seems to be saying too broad a brush stroke. Can you be a little more, doctor, definitive as to what you think the problem is, which churches and what they're doing wrong?
Well, I don't know if that's really the angle here that would make the most sense. I think what we have here is a huge learning opportunity, and I think that it's a mistake. For example, New Life is talking about this whole thing as an attack of Satan.
Well, let me stop you real quick. Is New Life one of the churches that you're talking about?
New Life holds to some of the toxic beliefs that I'm talking about. I actually have a couple of clients that are from New Life.
How widespread is this problem that you seem to perceive in this country, do you believe?
It's huge. We have tens of thousands of walking wounded in this country.
And would you compare it to what? The fundamentalist movements like in the Middle East, like the Taliban and stuff like that? Would you go as far as to compare it to that?
Well, it doesn't get as severe in terms of, you know, what people have to wear, although some groups do go that far. The similarity is the ruling that you're not supposed to think for yourself, and that's really dangerous. That's really dangerous to a democracy.
You're not against religion or Christianity, are you?
I'm not against healthy religion or healthy Christianity or healthy spirituality, and I'm certainly not anti-God, and neither is the website that Matthew Murray is posting on.
It's an amazing discussion. We'll continue to look into it, and I'm glad we were trying to get a chance to have both sides here. Former pastor. Leonard Lovett, and of course, Marlene Winnell joins us again. We'll continue to look into it. My thanks to both of you.
Yeah, they had me on a couple times. But
how long was this?
That was 07, I think. And the thing is, Matthew Murray, he shot up some people at... Youth with a Mission, the missionary training place where he had been training, and then he didn't get to go on a mission because he wasn't good enough. And then he went to the church the next day and shot about 5 people and then shot himself. So it was this huge event, this huge tragedy. And then after that, like I said, the church called it an attack of Satan. And then he called him a nutcase and crazy, and so did everyone else. And nobody really looked into it. Nobody really analyzed it the same way that everyone did on when Columbine happened. Do you remember Columbine? When that happened, there was a huge amount of discussion, you know, like, why did these kids do that? What are we doing wrong? What are the schools doing that would create a situation where kids would go to that extent and feel that bad that they would take guns and shoot? You know, there was this huge reflection, but this was the exact same situation and it was completely silent. And one person, Max Blumenthal, wrote an article like a year later, and it was a chapter in a book of his called The Nightmare of Christianity, and he quoted me on that. But that was it. That was it. And I tried to get on Larry King and places where we could have a longer discussion. This was a little short. That's Rick Sanchez. And the previous night I was on, and he goes, as a Christian, I disagree. He didn't like what I said because I said there was all this secret suffering and that there were, the night before I had said, there are a lot of people that are just as angry as he was. And I got lots and lots of mail from people said, I could have done that. I could have gone and done the same thing. I just don't have a gun. And people were thanking me for everything I said on there because, yeah, there's a lot of rage. I think there's a lot of rage in this room, isn't there? I mean, there's a lot of feeling, a lot of other feelings too, but anger is one of them because, you know, you've been through a lot. And then the silence is pretty maddening. And I'll get into why some of the feelings are so intense. Can religion be damaging? What do you think? Short answer, yes. I feel like I should sing if I go away. And it can be a continuum from mild to traumatic. It can be physical and sexual, mental, emotional, and the most ignored areas are mental and emotional, which can cause lifelong problems. Abuse can be active harm or neglect and deprivation. I have to be two-handed. Okay. Oops. Okay, so anxiety. These are quotes either from mail that I've received or clients that I've talked to. And the art that you see is from art therapy. I feel like much of my life was lived in fear. I am reading all I can to continue to find peace from what I've been taught. I still fear, and I'm 65. Unworthiness. I spent literally years injuring myself, cutting and burning my arms, taking overdoses and starving myself to punish myself so that God doesn't have to punish me. It's taken me years to feel deserving of anything good. I spent most of my life trying to please an angry God and feeling a complete failure. I didn't pray enough, read enough, love enough, etc. I had so many pent-up emotions and thoughts that were never acknowledged. Instead of protecting me from a horrible man, they forced me to deny my feelings and obey him, no matter what. It's no wonder I developed an eating disorder. So there's sexual abuse, domestic violence, all these things that go on behind closed doors, right? Because of the patriarchy and the hierarchy and the absolute obedience that is supposed to go on within the religion. And then the doctors and the authorities do a lot of covering up and have their own ways of treating within the system and even their own economy, right? So if there are bruises, they don't get reported, things like that. And so people turn the other way when children are sometimes getting abused. knowing full well. Does anybody know what I'm talking about? Okay, and then family rupture, of course. My daughter has cut us off from all communication. She feels we are a threat to her marriage. Her husband is a pastor in an independent fundamentalist church. This has hurt all of us so much. It is the one thing I have fought so hard not to happen. It feels like I've lost my daughter. I spend many moments just bursting into tears. Okay, so the fact is that we have basic needs. We have physical needs. We have emotional needs. And we're just wired that way. And religion gives us a package deal, or it gives us these pseudo answers. And some of these answers are pretty nice. You know, you get a good intellectual explanation for why everything is, the meaning of life, what's going to happen after you die. You get your fire insurance, your life insurance for eternal life. That's pretty cool. You get guidelines for how to live this life, moral guidelines. You don't have to think about what's right or wrong. You get a fairly simplistic system for living your life instead of all the complexity that most people live with. You get some serenity and beauty. I mean, wow. You Mormons have the Mormon Tabernacle Choir and these beautiful temples. And Catholics have cathedrals. I mean, there's a transcendence that taps into some things that we need. We have parts of our brain that respond to these things. And then you have your social needs met. I mean, we are social animals. We need each other. We need to belong. We need connection, right? And if you think in evolutionary terms, people that get isolated and alone, I mean, think about it in terms of the tribes that were wandering on the plains. If you got isolated and alone, you would die. Simple as that. So your craving to belong to a group is so deep and so hardwired, you can't fight that. That's real. So your terror for being rejected and cast out and being on your own is very deep. And then, of course, as a child, your need for your parents is primary. Humans do not survive within the first couple of years without their parents. You're not like other animals where when you're born, you can just get up, stretch, and walk off, you know, like some other mammals. You need like 2 years. You're so dependent. So these basic needs are rather perfect, aren't they, for getting you to be extremely vulnerable to any sort of controlling religion. But the thing is that when they are all wrapped up in this package, a client of mine calls the religion a Walmart of a place where you get all your needs met. And so when you leave, it's rather shocking that you have to go into different places for different things. Anyway, you're not supposed to question any of the details. You're supposed to just buy the whole package. So grief is another feeling. It says sorrow down at the bottom. How does religion continue? It propagates like a virus. Richard Dawkins has talked about memes and religion, like the spreading of memes. Memes are cultural units, ideas, and a meme complex is a whole complex of ideas that fit together like a puzzle. And religion is a perfect example. And Daryl Ray has written a book about called The God Virus. And it passes to new generations. to unsuspecting children, and adults convert when they are needy for family, right? There are plenty of people that don't have a satisfying family experience. So when missionaries come along and you're in a needy place, or if you've had a hard time in your life and you're away at college or you're on your own and you get an opportunity to join a group that's got a loving, doing the love bombing and pulling you in, and they're also on a mission to save the world, and you saw that there's something really exciting happening and to give you purpose in life, it's very, very appealing. And then you become addicted to the myth labs. That's my new word for churches. And then children and adults are taught to be phobic about the world, right? So you may be getting some of these needs met in the Walmart myth lab, but you're also taught to be totally phobic about what will happen to you if you leave, and what's out there is the domain of Satan, right? And terrible things are going to happen to you right now, not just when you die. Okay, two sources of trauma. One is the religious mindset, and this is across the board for all sorts of religious systems, and that is that it's authoritarian, and that conformity and obedience are the highest values. If you look at the Bible stories and even the way that they are taught to children in Sunday school, with the little pictures that are the little felt pictures that are put on the board and the little color books and everything, the lesson 99% of the time is what? Obedience. Whether it's Noah's Ark, which is a horrible story when you really think about it, or how about Abraham sacrificing Isaac? I heard somebody talking about hearing this while driving in the car with his pants. He was reading about it and, wondering what his dad was going to do to him if he really thought that. Okay, and then lastly, the severe consequences for disbelief, and that's the phobia. Phobia indoctrination, a phobia, what is it? It's when you have an irrational fear about something. It doesn't have to be rational. It's like if you had a traumatic experience with a bunny rabbit when you were 4 years old, right? And then for the rest of your life, you freak out every time you see a rabbit, okay? And you can't control it. You can't control your reaction. It's an irrational fear, and you're kind of stuck with it because it's been hardwired because of that experience. And so, and it can be one experience like that. It can also be something that you've been told over and over again, like an image of hell. So, like I said, I was going to be blunt. I think religion can be terrorism. I'm sick and tired of all the talk about terrorists and being afraid of terrorists when what we've got is terrorism within. You know, when you think about religion and the origins of it, and you think about it in evolutionary terms and anthropological terms, and people worry about the dangers and evil in the world, and you go back, you know, to primitive times, and people had to have explanations for things like earthquakes or floods or volcanoes erupting and things like that. It was a mystery, and it was scary and terrible. And so people made up supernatural explanations, right? and then they would placate the gods to have good crops, and they would do rain dances to get rain. And that's understandable that you would want to have supernatural explanations for things, and then you would want to do things in order to control your life to the best you can. And then you would also, in terms of understanding your own good and bad impulses and your own problems in relating to each other, since we are all capable of both good and bad, you would do some splitting and you would externalize the bad. So you create devils and monsters outside yourself, and you put the danger outside of you. And you can fear something outside of you, and you can judge, and you can condemn, and you can try to separate yourself, and so forth. So if you read about the origins of Satan as a character, or demonology, it's very interesting that way. And then you can also see it in our mythology, in our politics. You know, we demonize people from other countries, and try to make ourselves the good guys, and we're still doing a black and white thing, right? When actually we need to understand ourselves better, and we need to embrace the parts of ourselves that are not so great, and work through what we're doing. And right now, what we're doing in mass quantities in our own religious communities is terrorizing our own children and raising people that are basically very, very afraid. And when people are afraid, they're dangerous. When people are cornered, they're very dangerous. And we're still thinking supernaturally. I was just in Texas last week, and the governor of Texas, Rick Perry, is talking about praying for rain. What are we supposed to do? Go out and do a rain dance? The funny thing was, you know, there was no rain, and it was all dry and raining every place else, and then there were all these fires in Texas. And then last weekend, when I was there in Houston, it was the Texas Freethought Society convention and the American Atheists, and it started raining. So we were... So we thought it was great. The atheists came to town, and it rained. Okay, so here's an example. Okay, so fearing hell, I've had many clients. Now, you're not into the whole rapture thing, but in fundamentalist Christianity, it's very big. And back in May, it was supposed to be the end of the world, right? Do you remember that? I was in Oakland, and there was a convention there, and I was at a rapture party, and there were a bunch of us that tried to get raptured. We all at 6 o'clock. Mr. Deity, do any of you know Mr. Deity? He was there, and so there were a group of us that all tried to get raptured. We all at 6 o'clock. We all jumped and we filmed it and everything. It didn't work. But anyway, there are lots of people that have told me that as children, this was terrifying because every time they couldn't find their parents or something, they were scared they got left behind. And so they would feel totally abandoned. And what I just told you a minute ago about how you don't survive if you're left alone. I mean, you put a baby out by itself, it doesn't survive. So abandonment is your core fear, right? So all this stuff is really horrible. It's just as bad as fearing you're going to go to hell. So, you know, waking up and thinking that you're going to go to hell and screaming. So I have clients who are adults and married. This is really fun for the spouse. Okay, withholding information is also abusive. Restricting, controlling, and restricting development. If you grow up and you don't have normal information, you're not told, and I'm talking about educational things that you need to have, like science, but also just developmental things like sexual information or appreciation for your body or social information, how to relate to each other, or basic knowledge of critical thinking or how to express your feelings. These kinds of things that allow you to become a functional human being. So even if you reject your religion and your theology when you get to adulthood, you're still missing a lot that would equip you for life. And that's abusive too. Okay? So people that are recovering a lot of times feel like they're quite immature. They feel very young, like they have a lot of development to do. So I consider that abusive. And actually, when Child Protective Services or in social science, when people talk about child abuse, they also include neglect as part of it. Now, they're usually talking about physical things, like if you don't feed a child or if you don't clothe a child, they consider that to be abusive in the neglectful sense. But I'm saying that this should also refer to other kinds of neglect. So those of you that have been talking to me about all the information that you were not given growing up in Mormon households, that you had to search for, you know, that was wrong too, to put you in that position where you had to search for basic truth, basic information, just to function normally. And that includes sexual information. There are lots of people that I've known who just, you know, complete silence about sexual information, and also then thinking that sex is bad, and of course masturbation is bad. I love the way you guys are all so proud of masturbating now. Yeah, it's so great. You're proud of masturbating. You're proud of drinking. it's lovely. maybe we could just, you know, make a list of sins and vices and celebrate. But anyway, you know, I do a lot of sex therapy, and I've heard many times of people on their wedding night not being able to function, or just after suddenly it's okay, you know, you're married and suddenly you're supposed to turn the switch on, you're supposed to be a sexual being. Well, you know, maybe that doesn't work like that. Maybe you've spent so many years killing off your sexual feelings that it's kind of hard to function, and that's really sad, and that's, I think, totally wrong. You have a total right to be a fully sexual human being. But you can recover. It's built in. Don't worry. Okay, where are we? All right. A comparison can be made, I think, to domestic violence, where it's very, very hard to get away. And like I said, with the climbing out of the muck, climbing out of the slime, this is true. Very true in fundamentalist Christianity too, where if it's not working for you, you're the one that's not doing it right. Is that true in Mormonism too? Well, you know, I remember very clearly, and you know what makes me really sad? I can look back at my own diaries when I was a teenager, because when I was a teenager, I was very, very serious. And those of you that took your religion seriously, you know, you tried really hard. You wanted to be, you wanted to be devout. You wanted to do it right, and you were seriously wanting to be close to God, and serve Him and win others. You're the ones that I'm talking to the most, because you are very possibly sensitive personalities, and people are different. There are personality differences. Obviously, you would have environmental differences too, but people are also different from birth, temperamentally. And some of us were emotional and sensitive from the beginning, and we tried really hard. And so being disappointed was even more of a letdown and hurt a lot. like I said, you know, to lose my lover was pretty big. But like a domestic violence situation, if it's not working, and you feel hurt and you feel angry and you're trying to figure out what's wrong, and if you go to your pastor, your bishop, you get told that you're not doing it right. And you're supposed to do what? You're supposed to double up your devotional program, right? You're supposed to read the scriptures more, pray more, witness more, and look for that secret sin and confess it, because that's probably in getting in between you and God. Well, there's no end to that. And sometimes you can just have trouble finding that secret sin, you know. Oh, what was it? I didn't really do the dishes well enough. I don't know. And as a little kid, you know, what is it? So it's exhausting, and there's no return policy. It's not like when you buy a car and it's not working right, and it's a lemon and you can take it back. You know, this religion really isn't working right for me. I think I'll try Jehovah's Witnesses instead. No, you can't return it, right? So you get blamed and you try harder. And so like a battered wife, it's like battered wife syndrome, you end up just feeling worse and worse and worse about yourself. It doesn't occur to you that maybe it's the religion that's at fault, or maybe the God that you're so mad at, maybe he's not doing something right, and that it's not you, and maybe you should get the hell out of there. You know, it doesn't occur to you for the longest time. So some of you have gone through that cycle, right, over and over and over again, until it finally gets through that it's not you, and you get out. And that contributes to the anger, too, that you were made to go through that cycle for so long. Sometimes we need safe houses, too. I mean, I have people that are actually homeless because of it, because they were sometimes kicked out of families, or they were working for the church, and that was their employment. They're now penniless homeless because they're finally out, and everybody thinks it's their fault. Okay, now, so we were talking about some of the damage of the religion, like feeling like you're never good enough. You can feel like that for the rest of your life, right? If you were told from the beginning that you're sinful. I have a client that has had so much trouble with that, married with kids. He's been out for years and years, but every so often he just feels so bad about himself. It just overwhelms him. They'll be on a family vacation and in the car, and he'll have to pull over and put his head down and sob for a while. And it's just, you know, the family, they can't understand it, and he can't control it. But he can feel so bad about himself, he can't. It lasts. Or just being so terrified about, you know, having nightmares 50 years later and waking up in the middle of the night thinking you're in hell. Okay, that's from the religion itself. But then leaving the religion can be this huge break, huge trauma. Because then all of a sudden, everything you thought was real isn't real anymore. People who have not been through this don't get it. But it's like all your reality is ripped out from under you, right? Those of you that have, like, suddenly found out, oh, Joseph Smith was a fraud. How many of you found that to be a shock? We're a little shocked. Yeah. Well, I was pretty shocked when the Bible wasn't the inerrant word of God. Wow. In fundamentalist Christianity, we have a lot of bibliolatry. We don't, you know, they don't really worship God all that much. They worship the Bible. So when you find out who really wrote the Bible, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John or the books of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John were not written by Jesus' disciples. They were written in educated Greek. Jesus' disciples were illiterate fishermen who spoke Aramaic. Most Christians do not know that. They were written like decades after. They were not eyewitnesses. There were no eyewitnesses to Jesus' life that wrote anything. Unlike Joseph Smith, you guys have the only... unlike most religions, you have like a religion that is empirically verifiable. That's incredible. You realize that? That's incredible. Big advantage. I mean, for mine, it's like, who knows? Who knows? Have faith. You guys don't really have to have faith. You can just look at the records. Okay, so religious trauma syndrome. It's time to recognize it. I won't say too much more about that. This is too much reading. Suffering from guilt and depression, existential crisis of epic proportions. I'm only person in the world that this has happened to. This is the other problem. Everybody feels alone. So that's why it's so great that you guys are connecting. All these websites, wow, amazing and wonderful. And the post-Mormon groups that you can actually meet in person, that's great. I'm trying to do more coalition building of people helping each other. So that is really great. This is where you can say whatever you like. This should have
spent 26 years having community, and all your friends, all your family are diehard believers. And you say, hey, I don't believe anymore. It's devastating. The loss of community. I've lost friends over this. I have a friend who I've had for 27 years, since the third grade. He hasn't returned my phone call for 3 months.
So this is probably something that you can relate to, right? The rejection. How am I doing on time? Am I like nearly out of time? Oh. I have 45 minutes left. Okay. All right. Part of ADD is time blindness. It's awful. Let me tell you. I shouldn't. I missed my plane coming here. But there was another one. I like it. We are all flawed human beings. Isn't it great? When people ask me, you know, what I believe now or what I think about human nature, are we basically bad? Are we basically good? You know, like, because I was raised with original sin. We're all just basically bad, evil, sinful, stupid, crazy, empty. Anything good you do is because God's doing it through you, right? You're sort of an empty channel. Anything bad you do is your fault. So now I know a lot of people that come out of religion and then they claim something like humanism, which I think is great. If you haven't read the Humanist Manifesto, you should. It's great. Or naturalism is also great. People say, well, what do you call yourself? What are you? Agnostic, atheist, humanist. I just say I'm an animal. I think that evolutionary psychology has a lot to offer. You know, I'm descended from bacteria. But being an animal, I could explain what that means. It's meaningful to me. But we're all flawed human beings, and so we make mistakes, and we have strengths, and we have weaknesses. Some days I'm really great, I'm really loving and nice and sweet to everyone I know. Other days, I'm not. Other days, I'm... Some days, I have a headache, and I'm not very nice. So my daughter and I have this ongoing joke when we annoy each other or we're mad at each other. We'll say, "You're a flawed human being, and I love you anyway." "Why did you do that? You're a flawed human being." It's great. Okay, I'm so sorry. I'm a flawed human being. I'll try not to do that again. We learn. I mean, the point is that we're muddling along, and we try to learn. We're in process. There's nothing final. We're in process, hopefully. That's one thing that's different. Okay, where were we?
In true conservative Christian circles, it's only the act of intercourse. Like, you must be having intercourse. And so... this is also hard to talk about, but we've had a look. I mean, that's basically not worked for us because, like I said, don't know anything, not skill, don't know how to do it. And so I felt bad for that for years, that we had a horrible thing. We were committing sin against God because it's like, you know, we'd have oral sex or something, but we weren't. I mean... it's like, you know, the more that you're not supposed to think about something, the more you think about it, and then the more you beat yourself up over it, and then...
we both wondered if we were being punished.
Yeah, we were... our sex life was our... yeah.
Before we got married, we knew we had gone too far, according, you know, to our parents and everything, and so we both thought for a long time that we were being punished, you know, because it's like from that wedding night, like, mm-hmm. why did everything just stop? And, like, I totally froze up and...
yeah.
And then I mean, like, it started off really, really, like, the guilt of that has stayed with me for a really long time because, again, I'm just, like I said, I'm putting it all out on the table, you know. That, our wedding night, we're both freaking nervous and it's not working, and I believe it hurt a little, whatever we were trying to do hurt, and so we stopped, and, you know, I'm totally turned on, and I went into the bathroom and masturbated, and have felt guilty about that all the time, you know?
That's horrible.
That it's like, that was, well, maybe, you know, I had committed that sin that night or whatever, so, I mean, it's...
it's horrible.
And so after that, you had problems having intercourse?
Mm-hmm.
Or just that night?
No.
Like, from then on.
From then on.
So, I've made a list here. Wait. That's interesting. That's not the same list I have on here. We'll have a list. Have a look at this list. See if you can relate to any of these. I need some more water. Okay, it goes down to difficulty enjoying daily pleasures, and I have no idea why the rest of this isn't showing up. But after that, the other ones I have are perfectionism and unrealistic expectations, trouble appreciating people or making new friends, difficulty with responsibility, making decisions, lack of self-love or skills for self-care, trouble thinking for self and new ways of thinking, difficulty feeling and expressing emotion, external focus for satisfaction and guidance, immaturity, lack of experience with the world.
I have an awful time making decisions in general. Like, I can't, you know, wake up in the morning, what am I going to do today? Like, I just don't even know where to start. My life is fragmented into so many different things, and it's, you know, all the things I thought I might be doing are gone, and I don't know, should I even try to have a career? I babysit my four-year-old all day, and I don't have much of else of a, like, shit, my wife got a job half an hour from here. It's kind of an emergency to get us, keep us alive, essentially. And I just don't know. I mean, I like try to be pursuing something. Like, oh, maybe I can do this. And then there's pressure that it's, you know, I got to do that. And then, no, I shouldn't. And I just don't. It's like I get into this place where I'm. And usually it's in regards to making some sort of decision. And I just can't. It's like I'm spiraling down, and I can feel it. And so I tense up more, but the tensing more makes it worse, and I know it's coming more, and then I just am like screaming or crying or just shaking and either screaming in the car or just in bed, and I can't move, or I don't know. And I go back and forth between having hope that I'm eventually going to get out of this someday and have a normal life, and been thinking I'm not going to get better. I just need to accept this, or I don't know.
Okay. I'm going to explain a little bit about indoctrination and about your brain and about how you can get better. But right now, we're going to take a seventh inning stretch, and I'm going to suggest that everybody get up for a second and stretch. And those cards that you have, if you want to write a question or pass them on up, please like pass them down to the end of your row and then up. But everybody get up and jump up and down.
When you get done with your questions, pass them to the end of the row so I can come by and pick them up. Pass the cards to the end of the row so I can pick them up.
Okay, we're going to continue, please.
If we could.
I have some good news for you now. You've had a lot of bad news. I have some good news for you now. The cards are going to go to, pass them down toward the end. Sue and Mike, okay, are going to collect the cards and pick out some that represent some patterns and bring them to me in a few minutes. Okay, so basically what I think is really important, those of you that would like to heal and get better, is to understand a few things about your own brain and what you've been through, okay? Folks often hope that it's all just going to go away, but realize that some of this has been dumped into your head when you were very, very small. This is called indoctrination. And it's no accident that it starts when you're very little, because that's what works. It's called child evangelism. And these ideas are given to children when they're really small, because otherwise religions would die out, wouldn't they? Get them while they're young. If you go to Focus on the Family, Richard Dobson's website, there's instructions there to parents that their primary duty is to pass on the religion. And instructions are, you know, to mold the child's mind. It says it in so many words. A child's mind does not process information the same way. Their brain is not fully formed. cognitive development before age 7 or so is pre-operational. These are stages of cognitive development, which lacks logic and abstract reasoning. Thinking is easily magical and primitive, simplistic and black and white. So this is a really good time to give weird ideas to children, right? And they'll buy it. Also, like I mentioned this before, also young humans are wired to obey authority because they're dependent for at least 2 years for survival. Independence has to be learned. You learn to take care of yourself. Memories are made, especially emotional ones, which are encoded deeply in this earlier language. The reason you can't remember things earlier than about age 4 is because you were thinking differently. You were thinking in a different language, and those you have memories, but you can't really access them because you were processing in a different way, and they're lodged in the emotional part of your brain, and it's hard to access. That's why some of your healing has to be in that realm. It has to be emotional. It can't just be intellectual. So, for example, he died for me 2,000 years ago. Somebody hung on a cross. And that's because you sinned, because you didn't share your toys. You can sell that to a little kid, you know? But if you go to a full-grown, college-educated adult who is not really unhappy, you might have trouble with selling that idea. Or to another culture. There's a great YouTube video about a missionary who went to this tribe in South America and just couldn't sell it because they were happy and they just couldn't get it. And they asked him, you know, well, who is this Jesus? Have you talked? Is this a friend of yours? Have you talked to him? No. Well, it's in this book. Well, do you know who wrote the? No. Do you know anybody who did know somebody? No. Well, we don't want to hear about it then. And then he lived with them, and they were so nice and generous and great and having such a good time. They ended up deconverting him. But he's done this great. He's written a book, and there's this great YouTube series about it. Because it doesn't wash. It just doesn't wash. Anyway, okay. So, that's what happens. And it's done very deliberately. And you can be made to feel guilty. And so these are memes. This is a t-shirt. There's a website where you can buy all these Christian t-shirts. It says, guilty until proven innocent. And the innocent is on the back until proven innocent. And then there are these scriptures about how guilty you are. And so one of my clients, well, you know, I've talked to, and then after you come out of the religion, you can have all this shame about it, you know. Why did I believe that? You know, I feel so, I spent 20 years doing that, and it's so embarrassing and don't even want to tell anybody. And, well, and I say, no, don't be ashamed. You didn't have any choice. It's not like you asked your parents to do this. And, you know, even though they might say this was a free gift of God and it was a free choice, did they really sit you down and say, okay, here's all the religions. Would you, and we'll explain them to you. Would you like Mormonism, Jehovah's Witness, Buddhism, Seventh-day Adventism? Would you, you know, and what would you like? Menu. Did anybody have that? Anybody get that? Did anybody respect your freedom? No. So I did this cartoon. Mommy, do you think you and Daddy could raise me to think of myself as sinful and unworthy? And then before my brain is mature, could you imprint in me the image of being tortured in hell forever if I'm not sorry enough or good at submitting my will to your God forever? And please repeat these ideas to me at least weekly so that even when I'm grown, they will haunt me and prevent me from living a normal life, okay? And then she can grow up and be totally miserable, and it's her own damn fault. All right, steps in recovery. This is your handout. All right. Get real. This is where you get it. that your religion's not working for you. It's not making sense intellectually. It's not paying off emotionally. Or you see moral problems with it. This early stage is hard because dogmatic systems don't let go easily. Okay? Get a grip means to not panic. And other people have been through this. Don't freak out. It's part of the phobia indoctrination. If you're scared to death, it's part of the system to make you scared. Just because you're scared doesn't mean there's something to be scared of. You think there's a monster under your bed? It doesn't mean that there really is a monster under your bed. And because there are so many people that believe it, well, there was a time everybody thought the world was flat. Everybody thought that. It did not make the world flat. Keep that in mind, so that when you have those feelings, you don't necessarily make that connection. Number three, get informed. Oh, you guys have been doing a great job of that. I don't need to go into that. But aside from just researching your religion, you're now free to do all kinds of information gathering, reading all the knowledge of the world and watching videos and exposing yourself to history, philosophy, science, psychology, everything. And about the scriptures. Don't read the scriptures anymore. Read about them. How did they come about? Enjoy letting your brain breathe. Four, get well. Realize that you're not well, okay? If well means functioning in all sorts of good, healthy ways. It's not your fault. Okay? And it goes deep into your emotional, psychological makeup. And so don't be surprised if there's a gap between what you think and what you've realized intellectually and how you feel. A lot of people feel, you know, they're really confused about this. I don't believe in hell anymore, but I still get really scared. I hate that. Right? Or I don't believe these things are wrong, and yet every time I try to have a drink and I feel horrible, but I don't even believe it's wrong. Does anybody experience any of this? No? Okay. So, but that's the reason. It's because the indoctrination is below your consciousness. It's not an intellectual thing. Okay, so part of getting well can be to get support and also therapists that understand. Don't go back to your religious counselors. Don't go back to your bishops or, you know, don't. Just don't. Because they'll do the cycle of abuse, right? They'll tell you that you're not doing it right. And I had somebody who was never religious listen to this, and he goes, wow, that would be like telling an alcoholic that they're not drinking the right bourbon. You should try this one. That's really an amazing comparison. Okay, because getting well, the biggest recovery issue is learning to start to trust yourself, your own thinking abilities. All right, five is get a life. But, okay, we're sort of halfway through. But I'm going to pause for a second and give you something. Because, and again, this is a gift based on my experience so far. All right? And this was inspired. I am now giving you an official proclamation. And those of you that would like your own personal copy, I have these. It's like permission slip from the doctor. I'm a doctor, trust me. And I'm going to put them over there. So if you want to take one home, you can put it up somewhere. And so hear ye. All formerly faithful followers of authoritarian religion are now officially free to be individual human beings who think for themselves. The ban on trusting your own feelings and enjoying the pleasures of this life is hereby lifted. The ban is lifted. You are free to be in your own body, have your own intuitions, and make your own judgments about how to run your own life. And why do I get to say this? I'm saying this on behalf of the benign, obvious wisdom of the universe and all joyous living beings. Okay. Get a life means to letting go of the world religious worldview, to rethink who you are, what life's about, and rebuilding your life. You have some reconstruction to do. Okay? You have to take responsibility for your own choices. You've lost the Walmart package deal. Now you have to join the rest of us in doing what we're all doing, which is facing the existential dilemmas of being a human being. You're not off the hook. You're not off the hook. Just because you left Mormonism doesn't mean you're like free and clear now. Your life's going to be great. No, you have to deal with the fact that you're mortal. You know, we have to deal with things like mortality, top of the list, because we're humans, animals. We have this big brain that can imagine the future. So unlike other animals that are really good at just flying around, sitting in the park, lounging at the beach, not knowing too much about the future, we can picture the future. We have these cognitive abilities. We know we're going to die. So occasionally we have this, oh shit, feeling. Right? And we have this panic about how much time we have left. The squirrels that are buzzing around or the chimpanzees that are fucking all day long, they really don't really, really get it that they're going to die, you know? And so in a lot of ways, they're having more fun than we are. And we have to work really hard to learn how to be present, be in the moment. We go to these spiritual retreats to meditate all weekend long, to know how to be relaxed and present because, you know, we stress out. But so we have to figure out how to make peace with the fact that we live a mortal life. Okay, this is the problem of the centuries. Everybody, all philosophers from day one have tried to get a grip on this, okay? So you're stuck with that still. I'm sorry about the celestial kingdom. And those of you who were going to go to other planets to be gods, what a bummer. You know, I mean, you were looking forward to that, weren't you? Were you looking for... So there's kind of a letdown. So you have to deal with that. And so, you know, letting go of religion is good news and bad news. Good news, you're free. My son, my kids have been really funny because they weren't raised with religion. He and his friend, when they were teenagers, went door-to-door witnessing as atheists. They didn't get much of a reception, though. They knocked on this guy's door and said, "We have good news and bad news. Bad news, there's no God. Good news, you're free." The guy slammed the door. Anyway, I think that's true. Good news, you're free, you know. Let go of all that constriction. Boy, you guys have really had a lot. bad news, you need to take responsibility for your life now. That's the other existential dilemma that, you know, that everybody's written about, all the existential philosophers, you know, The Burden of Freedom, Eric Fromm, Rollo May, all these people, you know, like, all right, you're free now. What are you going to do with your freedom? What are you going to do with it? What have you done with your freedom today? If you're having a bad day, if you can't decide, like that guy who was like struggling with his decision making, that's real. And if you're not going to go on a mission, if you don't have all these callings, wow. If you're not looking for the will of God, now what are you going to do? If you don't know what you know purpose in life is, what meaning in life is, now what are you going to do? So you know now you have to be a creative human being that's going to make the most of life here now, and so that's your task. But and so you know. Join the rest of us. We're all doing that. Okay. Yeah. Getting to be time. Okay. Get clear with others is when you face the fact that you have this incredible dilemma between identity and intimacy. It's this huge tension. You want to be who you are, really, and yet you still want intimacy. You still want your bonds with loved ones. And how are you going to handle that until... For most people, it gets to a breaking point where they can't stand not being honest and real, and they have to come out and deal with those relationships. And that's hard, but that has to happen, and there's a process. Get on board is when you realize that you live here now. This is your world. This is your life. And you join in on living here now, being in nature, maybe getting involved, whether it's politics, environmentalism, your community. You don't expect God to solve everything. Jesus isn't coming back. You're not going to vote yes on Prop 8, please. You know, gays are your brothers and sisters. And you can enjoy relationships with everyone, not just your fellow Mormons. And the last one is get your groove on. Be happy. Be happy now. Sing, dance, enjoy your body. Sex is good. Be a good animal. Enjoy your food, your drinks. And joyful living is from being creative now. And God is not the only creator. You are also a creator, and you can discover that. You can sing and dance and paint and do whatever you like to simply express yourself. It's okay to simply be alive.
Quick announcement I have to do now. I just received notification from the restaurant that they have prepared with staff and everything to handle the crowd they had last year. So if you don't want to walk down several blocks, there's going to be plenty of help in the restaurant this year to get everybody in quickly. Go ahead.
There was no themes. Okay. I'm going to do questions, but I also want to tell you that on Sunday, after the conference is over, at 1 o'clock, I'm doing a group session for those of you that want to participate and do some actual exercises in looking at what you're going through and bring it home to some recovery work and some actual techniques for getting through some of this recovery work yourself. And what we'll look at is what I call the idea monster, and the way that the persistency of these ideas is and some of the symbolism that we can use with taking care of your the part of you that is like an inner child that you've been outsourcing the care of. Religion is like outsourcing to someone else to take care of the part of you that you need to take care of now. But using symbols and metaphor and all that is a way of using that deeper part of you that isn't so intellectual but works really, really well if you can start tapping into that. So we'll do that. We'll do the rest of this in that small group. And please come if you want to spend like an hour and a half, 2 hours with me. I promise that you'll be able to apply it to your life. And we'll, like, you know, see how this watermelon can get misunderstood. that kind of thing. All right? Okay, so I'm going to take some of these questions now. And also, if you look over there at the workbook I have, that workbook goes with my book. And if any of you are going to be forming some of your groups, your support groups, and meet, and you want to do something more than just socialize, and you want to, like, work through together, you can work through some of the exercises together, please feel free to use that workbook and do some of these things, and I'd be happy to consult and back you up on that because, you know, I can't be everywhere. I'm in California. If you want to come to a retreat and, you know, spend a weekend with me, that's great, but I would love to simply support, train, help you do it yourselves, okay? Anyway, I'm going to take questions now. But why don't we go to a prettier slide? Oh, this is the guy that was talking about his... I just want to show you that because he came to... You know, I was talking about reading and everything. This is Richard Dawkins. He came to a conference, and he's pretty happy now. He's doing much better. And that's the retreat. Okay, I'll leave it. I believe in life before death. That's my daughter. She's the flawed human being. Okay, for those in the process of coming out of Mormonism, what strategies would you recommend to reduce the fear and anxiety we are feeling? The fear and anxiety are coming from these pernicious, toxic ideas that have been drummed into your head and can now, and have been internalized, and that have been internalized now into some ideas in cognitive psychology. This is called automatic thinking, and they're like pop-ups. They're like pop-ups that you get on your computer, and they're hard to control. And so they need to be identified, and there are ways of starting to manage them and replace them with new ideas such as this. And so there are some steps you can take and some cognitive restructuring. Some of that is intellectual, some of that is emotional, and there are some definite steps you can take to do that so that you start having alternative ideas. Oh, here's another one. The truth that sets you free is the truth of who you are, okay? When you dare to trust yourself, you will know how to live. This is from Winnell, chapter 3, verse... No. The fear and anxiety... I understand that, but that's largely what the recovery is about. Can you please briefly tell us how to start recovering from shameful, controlling sex thoughts and actions to healthy thoughts and beliefs? Okay, please come to the workshop. Again, it starts with identifying. Oh. Put it. Okay. This little notebook. What I started to, I showed you that picture, the idea monster. An idea monster is this voice, the haunting voice that you have in your head. Okay, everybody has lots of chatter inside their head. Buddhists call it the monkey in the mind. And if you have like old thoughts that keep on coming up, like a good Mormon would, ex-Mormon would, like, oh, you shouldn't do that, shouldn't do that. Let's see. Then what's happening is you're getting these pop-ups that you've now internalized, and even if you've rejected the religion, they seem to still pop up. Does anybody have any of these? Okay. The first thing you need to do is identify them, and then you need to you need to distance yourself. And one way of distancing yourself is to phrase them like this, because these are imperatives that you're getting that you were not born with. You weren't born with the idea that you shouldn't drink coffee, right? So if you think about having this voice, this entity that you might call your idea monster, then you're being told these things repeatedly that you acquired, okay? They may have come from a parent, from your church, whatever, but then it kind of coalesced and snowballed and became an entity in itself in your head, all right? So now you need to deal with it. You need to tame it. You need to tame your own ideal monster, okay? So it's not your fault, and it didn't come from nowhere, but it's yours now. It's in your head, and you need to tame it and do something about it, and there are ways to do that. And the way you start is to start recording it, because when you put it down in writing and you put it down in you form, like, it's not, you're not saying this to yourself, and you disown it. But if you say, you aren't good enough, your body is horrible, you shouldn't be having sex. I mean, these things are, they're extreme, they're negative, they're overgeneralizing. You know, this is what monster talk is like, okay? And you put them down in your little notebook and you start gathering data. You start being a scientist, detective on your monster, and you start gathering data on it. And then there's some more steps you do to start disarming this monster. And then there's some rebuttals you have to work on, and then you start replacing these messages and replacing them with what you think. Like here, this is an exercise, and this is in my book, where you take each of these ideas. Like, let's give an example. These sentence stems from your old belief system, and then what it would sound like from your new point of view. Like, I am. What would be a Mormon finish to that? I am a child of God. And what would be a new way of ending that sentence? Okay, so you might end it differently. Life is... Mormon answer. Life is a test. Let's go down to my purpose in life is. What was that? Other people are. Okay, from a Christian fundamentalist point of view, other people are basically objects. They're either objects for conversion or objects of fellowship, or they're objects to be avoided because they're going to tempt me into bad things. Okay, now with each of these, they produce feelings, right? So you can figure out what each of these things, how they make you feel. Because feelings don't come out of nowhere. Feelings come from the way that you think about things, the way that you construe things, right? So then if you replace that, and now, if I'm free of that whole religion, other people are my fellow beings on earth. And they are interesting and potentially friends and, people to be curious about and love. And I don't have to change them or convert them. That feels very different, right? So here's a really great exercise for you to, you know, actively figure out where you're at with these ideas. And then you need to, there's old tapes that are playing. I have an article online where I say, make new tapes and play them often. You know, you need to reprogram, because old ideas, these automatic thoughts, there's evidence that thoughts actually form neuronal pathways in your brain where you just go that way over again and again, like driving to a a place that you go over and over every day, like to a place of work. You don't think about it. And so you change jobs, and then you get in your car to go to your new job, and you find yourself accidentally driving the old way. Has anybody done that? And so what do you have to do when you need to go to the new place? You have to have some awareness, right? You have to have some, you have to think about it. And then you think about it for a while, over and over and over again, and then pretty soon that becomes automatic. And that's what you have to do here. You have to think about it, and you have to raise it to awareness and put some effort in. So a lot of this recovery work actually requires some awareness and some conscientious self-love and attendance to your own health and well-being. And that's the way that you'll move forward. And, of course, with social support and everything. But there's an amazing amount that you can do for yourself. And an amount, a lot of damage that you can actually undo. And that's the good news. It's pretty exciting when a lot of people who are unaware of this, and a lot of therapists don't know anything about it. There are therapists that know something about trauma and healing from trauma, but they don't know that religion is also trauma. Are there meetup groups, and how do we find them in our area? Postmormon.org. What percentage of people who leave their religion quit believing in God or in everything, and in those people, how many later find a belief in something? I don't know numbers, but the word God is open in my opinion. If you mean a theistic God, like a person, or God of the Bible, a lot of people give that up, but they might retain spirituality in some other form. I also have an article about that, because people say, well, do you still believe in God? And I break that whole thing down. First of all, what does believe mean? And I find it kind of interesting that, at least in fundamentalist Christianity, our salvation hinges on believing Jesus as my personal Savior. And I go, well, believe. You mean my salvation, my eternal salvation, depends on a cognition? A cognition? What if, like, how surely do I have to believe? Like, what if one day I'm sort of believe, another day I'm not sort of believing, or what if I don't quite understand it, or what if I'm a little retarded, or, it's very odd. And because nobody in religion seems to understand anything about psychology. I mean, believe is a problematic word. And so, but then God is too. There are lots of ways to think about God and spirituality. So, in fact, the article is in that notebook over there. Do you believe in God? And it's online. I encourage you to read it, because I think I'm spiritual, but I think spiritual is here and now. I feel really spiritual out of nature. I feel really spiritual when I'm dancing. I feel like my daughter there dancing on the beach. And, you know, when I was coming out to my mother and we were talking, and I said, you know, Mom, I think God and I are on really good terms now. And she said, what? You know, and she had to, I said, why don't you just trust, you know, because she doesn't know what to do with me, because she thinks that I have a lot of integrity. I'm doing good work. I'm a good person. My missionary sister said she wished she had as much compassion as I do. And I'm going, what? So she said, you know, she was just going to have to trust God to figure out what to do with me. Oh, good idea. And then my book starts with my dream back years and years ago, when I was trying to figure out if I was going to be okay. And I dreamed that I was in heaven. And then I said, I think there must be some mistake. And then I felt God's presence or something. And God was over there, and he sort of liked me. And it seemed like he was sort of laughing. And I go, what's up? I don't believe. Why am I here? And he said, well, everybody's kind of misunderstood the criteria. And I go, well, what is it? And he said, you're here because you dared to live. Oh, okay. That's why I put that. I used that quote. But it was a transforming dream, you know, maybe it was a vision. But it was just a dream, and after that I felt like, all right, I'm okay. This is, you know, if there is a God, I think he likes me. But she would She would like me. Have you read many Mormon exit journals, and what do you think of them? I have read some, and like I said, I have enormous respect. I have enormous respect. My wife is a believer, and we have differences on how to teach the kids about the Mormon church. Is there a good way to deal with this? Wow. I have a lot to say about parenting. Like I said, I have several books in my head. If you're a parent, what I said about child abuse, I really believe that. So if you're a parent and your spouse is teaching religious indoctrination to your child, think about it. But realize that children are not idiots. And the problem with religious indoctrination is that they get told that this is the truth, the only truth, and you cannot think about anything else, and everybody thinks this. Well, what if you say that, okay, well, that's what mom thinks, or that's what the church thinks, that's not what I think. Your kid's going to go, oh, huh, now what do you think? You have every right to say what you think. Right? And you have every right to say that there are also all these other people that believe this and this and this. Take them to a Hindu. I took my kids to all kinds of things. I took them to a Krishna birthday celebration. I took them to Buddhist temples. I took them to Bali Hinduism. I went to a Jehovah's Witness kingdom meeting, which bored me to death, but, you know, I didn't make them do that. But anyway, no, as a parent, you have a right. You have a right to raise your kids the way that you want. Okay? Okay, one more. Anyway, so trust your child. Your child is not an idiot. Give your child the information. Have you been depressed? Have you seen depressing, psychotic episodes as a symptom of religious trauma? My mother was diagnosed with... A sweet, terrible person deserves to die. Yes, I've had people in hospital with psychotic episodes. I've had people, yes, everything, because this can do terrible things to your mind. And one of my clients landed in the hospital, and then the doctor said, "Don't you think you this is might be spiritual, and maybe you should get right with God?" It was horrible. But yeah, of course, it can do terrible things to your mind. And people get misdiagnosed, and they get diagnosed in all kinds of ways. They get diagnosed and medicated for all kinds of things. And so I'm in the process of trying to educate the mental health community that, no, it's not bipolar. No, it's not clinical depression. No, it's not OCD. No, it's not this. No, it's not that. You can have a lot of those symptoms, but if you group all of the symptoms the same way that you would develop a diagnosis of some other kind, and the way that diagnoses get developed, and you consider the etiology, which is how this thing comes about, we need a new diagnosis, a major need for a new diagnosis, and I have a contact, and I'm working on getting it into the manual. It's probably going to take a few years, but I'm working on it. That's why I've called it religious trauma syndrome, and that's why I was in Italy at a conference on religion and psychology and said, this is called religious trauma syndrome, and here are the criteria. This one client took it to the hospital with her and gave it to the doctor. And I go, oh, never heard of it, but we're getting there. And the rest of you, you know, who may not be suffering to that level, you don't have to be suffering to that level. It can depend on a lot of things. Maybe your experience wasn't that bad. Maybe you are a more resilient person. Maybe, you know, you didn't buy it as much. Maybe you didn't take it that seriously. Whatever. Good for you. But, you know, there are still some things that maybe you can do to help yourself, let it go let it go and grow and let yourself now blossom as a human being. And good for you. I support you all the way.